C1P. Number 9B.
So, if we want to summarize that tone of soul, perhaps we could summarize it like this and say, now, if our rule of being is really the supremacy of soul, if we make it as a rule that we rise above the situation, that's the supremacy of soul. If we make that the rule, how can we actually experience that rule? What shall we do? So mind would say, well, first you have to do that with your mind, namely by disputing and the testimony of the physical senses, by not agreeing with the testimony of the physical senses, by not believing into the testimony of the physical senses. You can hear all that tone of mind, not believing, disputing, and so on. At the point of spirit, it says, but that is not quite enough. It's not just a mental rule. It is a spiritual rule. Therefore, meet really this opposition with the strength of spirit. So she appeals as a rule of rising higher to the strength of spirit and say, do it with the strength of spirit. Don't do it just by thinking. Do it with the strength of spirit. Meet this testimony, this false testimony, with mental opposition and with the strength of spirit. And that is not just a nice little rosy pathway. Soul says it is something very stirring, namely rise in rebellion against them and contradict them and rebuke them. That's the rule of soul. Then the rules of principle says, and therefore take the whole situation into your own hands. You are the only authority. It depends on you what is going to govern you. So be your own authority. Make your decision right now what should be govern you, either harmony or discord. And life says that rule of soul as life is asking us to exercise this God-given authority. Use it and take possession of the circumstances. Take possession of your body and whatever Mrs. Eddy has said, that govern its feeling and action. And nothing can vitiate this ability bestowed upon men. So you use here the rules of soul. Yes. Well, that's soul. So we come to the next point, namely principle. After having shown the rules, now she shows really the government of principle. Again, we have to ask ourselves, we are in the third part. The third part tells us that being is untouched. Okay, so if being is untouched, we ask at the principle, it's untouched by what? It's untouched by the counterfeit of principle, namely, untouched by human theories and dogmas and things like that. So that the government, that's our epitome, so that the government of being is actually the omnipotence of principle and not really the government of human theories, of human principles or dogmas. So if we see that and we rest in that assurance that being is always governed by principle and that the government of other principle, other theories cannot touch really being. So this is the main tone. And we just flow through the subtones of mind, and we consider now the whole the whole proposition of government through principle from the point of view of mind. And therefore we have here the divine mind, not the law of mortal mind. We see against the government is law. Government at the point of mind is always law. The law governs. So the divine mind, not the law of mortal mind, governs man and body. If we see that, then being will be untouched by wrong laws. She reasons like this. She says it is the divine mind that governs. And you know that government has to do with principle. So in science, man reflects that government of the divine mind. And so that government of the divine mind, she says, is really the light of the body. And that light depends upon mind and not on the visual organism. Therefore, there is no other government. There is no other law, she says, namely the law that matter could govern you, that matter can ache you, swell, and be inflamed. Matter has no government to do that, and the body only suffers because of the law of mortal mind. So this is here the government of mind. We begin to see that in that being that is untouched, there is a government going on, but that government is principle, and it governs as the law of mind. And therefore it never governs as the law of mortal mind. So the law of mortal mind, law of mortal mind's government cannot touch the real law of divine mind. As spirit, the epitome here is understanding that neither man, mind, nor matter can be sick, and that sickness is not real. Can you hear the tone of spirit? It's a universal remedy. So what she wants to say is that neither man, mind, nor matter can be sick. So that there is no reality in the material man, in the material mind, or material matter. She says, man is never sick. Because, why? Because mind is never sick. And matter, she says, cannot be sick either. And I think we should remember that. That in a disease or whatever it is, that we know that matter cannot be sick, mind cannot be sick, man cannot be sick. What then is that sickness of which we talk about? She says sickness is a false belief. Therefore, it is not real. Because it's a false belief, it's not real. But can you see how she makes always step-by-step reasoning? If something is false belief, then she can go to the next point of spirit and says, therefore it is not real. So sickness is not real. Therefore, we should understand the unreality of sickness, and that this understanding would be really the universal and perfect remedy. All right. So here we have another great point, that the government is in understanding, and that matter cannot govern us. So that matter cannot interfere with the understanding of principle. We go to soul. The epitome reads, rising above. Can you see, always when we come to soul, it's somehow rising above. You notice now, as you go on, that Mrs. Eddy really has a kind of a flow, has a kind of a development constantly in her reasoning. What she usually has to say, and it's a line that really flows practically through all her writings, that in mind she always first has to say, look here, the proposition is a proposition, I mean, when it is a wrong proposition, that you always will have to say, look here, that whole proposition is always a mental proposition. Always a mental. Mind. It's never something per se. It's never a body. It's never a person. It's never a situation. It's always a mental case. It's always a mental situation. There you have to start. Always a mental thing. Then a belief situation. Then at the point of spirit, you will always come up somehow and say, and you know, therefore, because it is a belief, it is not real. It has not a reality. But that's usually the second step of spirit. It says, therefore, it's not real. Then as a third step, usually she must say, well, what shall I do now? I have here a belief, and that is unreal, and yet I suffer under it, so what can I do? So the third is usually that say, well, rise above it. Rise above it. So soul always somehow gives an indication of the supremacy of soul and says, rise above it, you know? Soul is that resurrection, says. Rise above it. Can you slowly hear that there is some kind of a law that flows always through these subtones? A law that flows through these subtones. So at the point of soul, you always have that rising above. That tells you, don't stay down there in that realm of belief and unreality. The third stage, Mrs. Eddy says, in the order of Christian Science is an important one, she says. You see, it's an important one. It's there where we make a turn, and there we say, now I don't go along anymore with those belief stuff and that unreality stuff. Now I'm going to do something about it. So it's an important one. She said, letting in the light of spiritual understanding. So you go and say, I'm no more be concerned with the realm of belief. Now I rise to the realm of understanding and spiritual understanding. So soul here too says, rise above, rising above our difficulties, stimulates the recuperative power of mental energies. Here you have a wonderful sense of, in the tone of principle, of the operation and government of principle, therefore of the recuperative power of mental energies. It says, you trigger off the government of principle the moment you rise above the mortal plane of things. So, or put it the other way around, if you rise above the mortal sense of things, you trigger off really the whole government of principle. Yeah, that simple as that. You just have to get accustomed to those laws, to that ascending law of the world order that always starts out with mind, and then with spirit, and then with soul, and then principle, life, truth, and love. So, she reasons like this. She says that really the mental energies are the only real recuperative power. Therefore, if that is so, if the mental energies are the recuperative power, therefore it would be quite reasonable, the knowledge that we can accomplish the good we hope for is therefore stimulating the system to act in the direction which mind points out. Isn't that beautiful? Huh? See? So we know that the mental has abilities and has power and can trigger off really the recuperative activities. Therefore, alone the knowledge, you see, that we can accomplish the good we hope for is already acting and stimulates the system to act in that very direction into which we look. Therefore, it's so important that we know in which direction we are going to look, which is our goal, where are we going. Because if we, with our acknowledgement or with our vision, we really lean towards that direction, everything is mobilized within ourselves to put everything into that direction so that the accomplishment is possible. Therefore, we have to have consecration. We have to have a devotion. We have to have a commitment to the idea. Without a commitment to the idea, we just play with it, and therefore we never accomplish anything. So students of Christian Science mostly play with the textbook. They play with these ideas. There is no life commitment in it. It's just trying to get something out of Christian Science. How much can I get out of it? They never ask how much can I put into it, which is commitment. We never get anything out. All what we can do is to put everything into it. We have to make an absolute turn in our attitude and say, don't say, what does Christian Science give me? Don't ask what Christian Science could give you. Don't ask that. Ask, what can I give to Christian Science? That commitment is necessary. And only if that commitment is there, we really get what is necessary for our development. So, knowing that we really can accomplish the good we hope for, Mrs. Eddy asks us to rise above our difficulty. We must see that no condition is beyond the control of mind, that everything is possible for mind. See, only that which mind has foreseen is possible. Those things which we have foreseen are not possible. Only that which mind has foreseen is possible. So that we should not admit any discouragement and not to be depressed of our mental energy, but really to put everything into it. So this is the third stage on the government, the third state of rising above the difficulties, rising above and knowing that if we put everything into it, that is the authority which will govern the case and therefore which will fulfill really the good we hope for. If it comes to principle as principle, what is here? The epitome is God is omnipotent. That's the government of principle. Whereas material systems, now you get the counterfeit of principle, whereas material system and their theories are fallacious. She, therefore, in the text, compares those two things, namely the material theories and God's omnipotence. She says it is proved that material systems in general are fallacious and are pernicious, whereas we should remember that God is omnipotent, and what does she say here? That God is omnipotent, and that this should be understood through science, not through human theories. So you have science versus theories. And therefore we should remember man's immortality and eternal likeness to God. So here, what is the government of principle? As principle, we would say, it is not material theories, it is our understanding of science that governs. That's typically principle as principle, you see. Then, as a last point, is principle as life. Here we have the epitome, the divine authority of science. See, that's principle. The divine authority of science destroys the material method of healing, life. Now she takes in the subtone of life, the method, the material method of healing. And then sin, sickness, and death will disappear. So the government of principle here at the point of life is actually the true method, the scientific method of healing. She says here that the healer must speak to disease as one having authority. That's principle. Leaving soul to master the false evidence of the corporeal senses. She says, yes, the same principle cures both sin and disease. There is only one principle, the government of the one principle, for every case, sin and disease. In divine science, faith in God destroys then faith in material methods of healing. You know, method is always life. So that here now the government of principle would say, I govern only with the true method of life, with the spiritual method of life, and not with the material method of life. So that's all about principle. If we just try to summarize it, we perhaps see the following thing. We can summarize it from a positive or from a negative point of view. It doesn't matter, because we have to see both sides. We have to see what is the government of principle. Untouched, that it is always untouched, that it is not changing. And on the other side, we can see the suggestions that try to touch, really, that government. If we go out from the positive sense, then we have seen that the epitome reads that the government of being is the omnipotence of principle. So, what is the government of principle from the point of view of mind? The government of principle operates and governs with the law of mind. That's always, with the law of mind. That government of principle operates in spirit through understanding, and not just through beliefs. And at the point of soul, that government of principle always governs by rising above the difficulties, not by delving into difficulties and constantly arguing with the difficulties. But it governs only then when we rise above the difficulties. And then she shows what is the government of that principle at the point of principle itself, that it says that government of principle is what? Is a science that governs according to system and not according to theories. So that's the government. And as life, it uses what? That government of principle uses really the method, the scientific method of healing, and not the material method of healing. So that's your government. Actually, you can say, well, but Mrs. Eddy wants to bring out in that third part, really, life as soul, and show that being is untouched by its opposite. So here, in the government of principle, that government of principle is untouched by opposite arguments. What are these opposite arguments? The first argument is that you can destroy or outbalance the government of principle through the opposite of mind, namely through the so-called laws of mortal mind, and let them operate, and that they govern your case. Or as soul, you can see that what claims that it can touch, really, that harmonious government of principle is that we feel that matter has governing power, that matter itself says, I can become sick. I have within myself also the power to destroy and not so much to destroy, but to become sick. Or what we meet in practice is so that it says, yes, that's all right, you are seeing as the government of principle. But you know the body is governing you. And the body is governing you, and you can't do a thing against it. That's the opposite of soul. And the opposite of principle comes and says, you know, that's all right, but you can't heal. Things will not get right except you take really medical theories and medical advice. The material theories will govern the case, not the divine principle will govern the case. And as an opposite of the tone of life, subtone of life is that it says, and in order that you really can govern your body properly and that you will regain your health, is that you apply now medical methods of healing or hygienic methods of healing or whatever method of healing you can have. You apply it and then things will get better. So these are very, very common arguments. Wouldn't you say that these are arguments that you meet practically in every case? That there is a belief that others, another government than the government of principle, is necessary to restore being. Where she said, no, no, being does not be restored. Being, life is soul. Being is always intact. And it always remains intact and does not need anything that is foreign to being. It does not need any mortal mind influence, it does not need any matter, it does not need any bodily condition, it does not need any material and medical theories, it does not need any medical methods of healing. Nothing is necessary in order that life remains life. Yes, that's what the practitioner has to see, you see, so that he is not wavering. See, that whole third part is, so to say, to give to the practitioner backbones, and that he sticks really to his understanding and says, I know that being is life, and that that being cannot be brought out of balance, that it cannot be touched, that it cannot be deformed. Nothing can do that. And so it refutes all the opposite that tries to interfere with it and refutes it. And here it is, the government of principle that refutes that anything else but God's omnipotence could govern too. Yeah, that's it.